How big is the stack of books you want to read this summer? If you're like most teachers, the stack is sky high. This is exactly why I'm hosting the first ever English Teacher Summer Reading Series. What is the English Teacher Summer Reading Series? It's a free event that's happening between June 4th and August 7th. Attendees of the event will go deep into 8 super popular professional development books without reading a single word or buying the books, unless you want to, of course. Attendees will receive a video overview of each book every Saturday, and I will put those overviews into a Facebook group dedicated to the event. I will be doing this every Saturday, except I'm actually going on a camping adventure vacation to Colorado. So I'll take a couple of Saturdays off in the summer. But other than that, I'm going live every Saturday. The video overviews will include a one sentence summary of the book and 5 key insights gained from the book. I'll provide my recommendation about the book and my opinions about the book. You'll be able to participate in discussions in the Facebook group dedicated to the event with other teachers. And I'm giving away a whole bunch of bonuses as well. So that's really exciting. If you want to learn more, then you'll definitely want to visit this link, bit.ly/summer-reading-series-2021. And I'm sure very soon I will have a pop-up on AmandaRightNow.com signing up for this as well. So what exactly is this going to look like? That's what this episode is all about. I'm actually going to kickstart this series with a book that I think every teacher should read themselves, but I'm going to give you an overview of it and I'm going to go pretty deep into it. The book is called 7 Myths About Education by Daisy Christodoulou. Welcome to the Workshop Teacher Podcast, a podcast for teachers who are interested in trying workshop in their classrooms and teachers who are obsessed with it, like me. Hey, just a quick note before we get started. I mispronounced this author's name throughout this episode. So her name is pronounced Christodoulou, not Christodoulou. So I just wanted to clarify that real quick instead of having to re-record the entire episode. First, a one-sentence summary that captures the entire book. This sentence is actually taken directly from the book. It's a quote. The reason why students have such poor skills and know so little is because we have failed to teach them those important skills and knowledge. All right, let's go deep into this. Myths are widely held false beliefs. In her book, Christodoulou convinces readers that there are 7 myths pervading educational systems around the world and most negatively impact students from low socioeconomic backgrounds. Christodoulou demonstrates with facts and analysis of evidence that there are major problems with educational programs for teachers, the way we educate our children, and the way leaders are trying to go about improving schools. For each myth, the author uses 2 categories of evidence proving the myths exist: theoretical and practical. The theoretical evidence is based on what both past and present educational philosophers and theorists have published about how to teach. The practical evidence is based on teacher training literature, testing questions, test results, and teacher observations done by the Office of Standards and Education, Children's Services and Skills, also called Ofsted, which is based in the United Kingdom. So what are these 7 myths that Christodoulou suggests exist in our society when it comes to education. Here they are. Number one, facts prevent understanding. Two, teacher-led instruction is passive. Three, the 21st century changes everything. Four, you can always just look it up. Five, we should teach transferable skills. Six, projects and activities are the best way to learn. Seven, teaching knowledge is indoctrination. For time's sake, I know there are busy teachers listening to this, I will only summarize the chapters about myths 1 and 2. According to Krista Dulo, myths 1 and 2 are the major foundational myths that make all the others possible. So once you understand the first two myths, you can easily see how they stem out to form the other false beliefs. So myth number one, facts prevent understanding. This chapter and every chapter after it begins with Krista Dulo explaining where there is evidence that people actually believe this myth. So myth number one, facts prevent understanding, began with the teachings of Jean-Jacques Rousseau in his publication, Education. In this book, Rousseau says teachers should not use verbal lessons, but that teaching through experience alone is best. Learning by doing, right? John Dewey also emphasized learning by doing. Krista Dulo goes on to provide many excerpts from publishings of multiple educational theorists, including John Dewey and Jean-Jacques Rousseau, to demonstrate how the myth that facts prevent understanding grew in influence over time. She even uses excerpts from popular literature by Charles Dickens and characters just constantly tortured with drill and kill in their classrooms. Charles Dickens does this all the time in his books. Next, Krista Dulo uses training books used in educational programs for teachers and teaching manuals used in schools to prove this myth is in action in modern day times. She also points to the school standards used in the UK to do this. Anyone reading Common Core standards can see the lack of details around factual knowledge students should acquire. The focus is instead on the skills students will come away with. After proving the myth exists, Krista Dulo presents studies about how the human brain works and how it has two ways of storing information. There's working memory and long-term memory. She shows how we can store more in long-term memory through something called chunking. The example used in the book of this process is presenting someone with 16 random letters for 5 seconds and then having the person repeat all the numbers back. It's impossible to store that much in short-term memory. However, if presented with 16 letters in chunks, you'll easily be able to repeat those 16 letters back, such as the cat is on the mat, which has 16 letters in it, that sentence. So you can see it's possible to remember things when you chunk them and store them in long-term memory. The point is that when we learn strategies like letter sounds and blending to read words, this information can be stored in long-term memory. The more information we can commit to long-term memory, the better, because we can conserve the limited space we have to work with in working memory, which can only hold like maybe 6 pieces of information at a time. So when you learn that C-A-T makes the word cat, you don't have to constantly remember, oh, C, what sound is that again? K-k-k. Oh, A, what is that sound again? Because that's what kids do when they learn to read, right? And it takes time. But once they see that word, it activates long-term memory when they see it over and over again. So why is this so important, and what does it have to do with this false belief that facts prevent understanding? Krista Dulo says it best. This is a quote from the book. Critics of fact learning will often pull out a completely random fact and say something like, who needs to know the date of the Battle of Waterloo? Why does it matter? Of course, pulling out one fact like this on its own does seem rather odd, but the aim of fact learning is not to learn just one fact, it is to learn several hundred, which taken together form a schema that helps you to understand the world. Christodoulou also asks us to consider Bloom's taxonomy and the way in which it is set up. Many educators, myself included, have always considered knowledge as lower level. Christodoulou proposes that we stop thinking about the taxonomy in this way. Rather, we should think of it as knowledge being the foundation for all the other thinking processes. She makes the case that actually knowledge and skills are deeply intertwined, and you can't have one without the other. When teachers involve students in higher order thinking, they must make sure students have the appropriate facts and knowledge base first. Christodoulou provides many examples demonstrating that with a lack of facts and background knowledge, students don't have the resources and information necessary to think critically about the topic for which we are teaching. In the last paragraph of this chapter, Christodoulou differentiates between fact learning in and of itself versus the teaching methods of imparting facts, like how we go about doing that in our classrooms. She admits that these are two different aspects of the issue, but the next chapter goes into more detail about how the methods teachers use to impart facts to their students is also frequently frowned upon compared to other teaching methods, such as projects and group work. Okay, so myth number two. Let me remind you of what myth number two is. It's teacher-led instruction is passive. In this chapter, again, Christodoulou goes into the theoretical and practical evidence that this myth, teacher-led instruction is passive, that it exists, that it is prevalent in our society. She starts with the educational theorists and philosophers Rousseau, Dewey, and Freire. Based on all the quotes from the literature these men published that Christodoulou provides, it is clear to these educationalists, teaching facts is bad for two reasons. This is a direct quote from the book. First, it is actually immoral. It damages the child. It knocks all the joy and spontaneity out of childhood and turns the child into a passive and unthinking creature. Second, it is ineffective. It does not work. And if you really want to see the excerpts from these philosophers that Christodoulou places in her book, it will really show you that, yeah, they were pretty anti-fact-based teaching. They were more all about experiential learning. Next in the chapter, Christodoulou looks very closely at the advice that is given to teachers and schools about how to teach by Ofsted, the Office for Standards and Education of the United Kingdom. First, Christodoulou provides a bit of background about Ofsted. The associates of this governmental organization observe teachers and provide reports to schools about their findings, which could lead to the closure of schools if the results are unsatisfactory. These observations are prearranged, which means that often the teachers have to put on a show in order to attain satisfactory or outstanding results. So what are Ofsted associates looking for in their observations? Christodoulou uses 228 lesson reports by Ofsted to break down what exactly is praised and what is criticized by Ofsted. She uses a multitude of direct quotes from Ofsted teacher evaluations, which are in the public domain, to show, this is a quote from the book, they, Ofsted, warn the teacher against giving too much direction. Teachers are warned not to talk too much and not to tell pupils things. They are encouraged to plan lessons where pupils discuss something they already know or where pupils find things out for themselves, often in groups of peers. In the lessons that are criticized, very often the feature being criticized is the teacher talking too much or imparting facts of teaching activities that involve factual recall. Christodoulou goes on to describe how detrimental it is to students when we don't explain things to them in direct ways. She helps us realize that students who aren't taught facts lack long-term memory storage and therefore become overwhelmed with all they have to grapple with in their short-term memory. Here's a quote. When we are presented with lots of new information with very little guidance, it is hard for our working memories to make sense of the new information. Pupils will struggle to commit any facts to long-term memory while they are trying to make sense of lots of information on their own. So that is a quick overview of the book and the first two chapters of the book. So you'll, during the summer reading series, you'll expect something like this every week, about a different book every week. Again, you should definitely consider signing up because it's free and you'll get a lot out of it. Now, what about the five takeaways? What are the biggest takeaways that I received from reading this book? So the first one is, most schools are not providing the best education to students, especially those from low socioeconomic backgrounds. These students need direct instruction, facts, exposure to information about the world, about history, about science, and current events. Krista Dulow helps me realize that these subject areas need to be prioritized in all classrooms, you know, not just the history classes and the science classes, but also in our English classrooms as well. We need to be teaching our kids about the world. The second takeaway is that educational stakeholders pay too little attention to the content of lessons. They don't pay attention to it and instead get caught up in school systems and procedures. We desperately need better standards that explicitly state the facts that students will learn and better curricula to teach these standards. Number three, when making decisions about what is being taught and how, we need to pay attention to the science about how people learn. The long-term memory, the short-term memory, how can we help students think about these topics, these facts, and be able to remember them and store them in long-term memory rather than constantly having to grapple with the short-term memory, the limited capacity of the short-term memory. So much of what we teach is so fragmented. And then the fourth takeaway is what teachers are taught in educational teaching programs is most often wrong and ineffective. And a lot of what I learned from this book really kind of made me angry because I just, and it resonated with me because I felt like, you know, I've been exposed to all of this literature and information about how important experiential student-centered education is in motivating students. But actually, when kids learn about the world and current events, they feel proud to learn these things and to know these things. And they go home and tell their parents about the things that they're learning in the classroom. So it's teaching, lecturing, telling kids things about the articles you're reading or the stories you're reading, it's powerful and it's important. And then number five, each myth described in the book is damaging our education system. It has roots in history and educational philosophies and doesn't align with the science about how people learn. So those are just five takeaways from the book. I've also included in the show notes some of my favorite quotes from the book. I think I have about six of them, so you'll have to go check those out. And one of them, I'll just read the shortest one. Knowledge doesn't indoctrinate. Knowledge liberates. Okay. Now, I also provide other authors that are referenced in the book and that Krista Dulow speaks very highly of, because you might want to read those books as well and those authors. Now for the review of the book. Daisy Krista Dulow didn't have to do much to convince me that these seven myths exist. Everything she wrote about resonated with my experience as a teacher and my keen interest in social justice issues. I can't understate the importance of this book. The more teachers read it and become fully aware of these myths, the better our educational system will be for it. Teachers, myself included, who want to motivate and engage their students, get caught up in making learning memorable with student-centered activities, simulations, and projects. They believe, myself included, that as long as they are providing time for students to read and write, and time for them to interact and learn by doing, that students will improve and become avid readers and writers eventually. Through her book, Krista Dulow has made me realize that that last statement about, as long as I'm giving time for kids to read and write, they'll get better, that last statement is actually another pervasive educational myth too. Krista Dulow makes clear in the book that she's not criticizing methods to engage students. She believes wholeheartedly in doing things in the classroom that are motivating for students. What she's criticizing is the common held belief in education that factual rote learning and direct instruction aren't that effective, and that we need to steer clear of these methods. I am now a firm believer that facts and direct instruction are vital components of our teaching practices that must stop being taboo and instead be prioritized in order to serve our students, especially those from lower socioeconomic backgrounds who have less access to books, museums, travel, and just knowledge about the world. If you read only one book the rest of your teaching career, which I doubt you will, I recommend that you choose this one. And I just want to end. I was talking to a friend the other day who's not in education, but she has kids that are in first grade. They're actually in my daughter's first grade class. And we were talking about this, and she was really shocked, actually. I don't think parents are fully aware how little information we actually teach to students. And so I was trying to give her an example. So there was a video that my daughter had to watch. There, it was actually a series of videos, and there was a teacher, it was on YouTube, and there was a teacher teaching, talking about multiple books, and there were books about like Martin Luther King Jr. and books about animals and books like fantasy book, fairy tale books about unicorns. And the whole video, I mean, it was like a good, probably total of an hour that was the videos were focused on helping kids learn genres, like what's the difference between literary nonfiction and biographies and autobiographies. And I mean, that's a lot of time to spend learning about different genres of literature. And what occurred to me was, why? Like, why do kids need to know all these genres? Why can't they read these books? How come the video isn't, you know, reading the actual books and explaining the concepts and explaining the key vocabulary and letting kids talk about the books? Like, why didn't they spend some time at reading these animal books and reading these Martin Luther King Jr. books? I mean, I guess knowing the genres of different books is important, but to me, I would rather have my daughter exposed to the content of those books more than being able to differentiate between literary nonfiction and biographies. So this is just one small example. Another example is there's, you know, while my daughter's been doing distance learning, she's actually in person now doing hybrid learning, which is really exciting. It's just been, this is the second week of that. But she has been doing a lot of worksheets, which, you know, you got to do what you got to do as a teacher, right? And so she's doing math worksheets. She's doing phonics worksheets, which I think are important. I do. She's practicing these skills. But she definitely is not enjoying it. But we also, in addition to all of these packets that she's been filling out and things, we've also been getting these social studies kind of time for kids little articles. And none of that is actually, it's all optional. So we spend all of our time doing these worksheets, and we don't have enough time to look at these time for kids articles, which it's spring break now, and I'm planning on reading them with my daughter. And I know the teacher intended for us to be reading them, but I know that oftentimes social studies and science get pushed aside. And it's wrong. if you care about social justice, if you care about changing the way that we go about educating our students, you should read this book, Seven Myths About Education. And we need to start exposing our students to more knowledge about science, about social studies, about current events. I really think that if you do nothing else for social justice, those are the things that you could be doing to make a difference and to support our students. Okay, I am super excited about this event that's coming up, and I really hope you sign up and participate. It's not going to be a huge time commitment. You'll have access to the replays of all the videos until August 31st. So you have plenty of time, and they're going to be really short videos for you to just kind of get a taste of the book and figure out, you know, do I want to buy this book? And how is it going to impact my teaching? How is it going to improve my teaching practices? That's the goal. So just sign up. And yeah, if you'd like more information about the 8 professional development books that we're going to be reading, definitely go to bit.ly/summer-reading-series-2021. I can't wait to connect with you soon, and feel free to share this episode with colleagues and share the blog post. It always helps. If you loved this episode, give the podcast 5 stars. That also helps to get the word out about this information. I really appreciate all that you do to share these things, this podcast and the website and everything. So thanks for listening, and I'll be back again soon.